Hello and welcome to Hello and welcome to the Broken Gun Podcast. Hello, guys. Welcome to the Broken Gun Podcast. Sorry for the slight delay in recent events, but we are back. So we have a special guest, but we're going to get to that in a minute. First of all, I'd like to say a massive thank you to Johnny Carter of TGS fame for turning up on time, as ever.
Hi,
so
Johnny.
We'll proceed. Hi, Johnny. You've got anything to say? Hi.
Johnny! However,
at the moment, I am joined by Lloyd Patterson, Bruce is shooting, and our mystery
howdy,
guest.
Howdy.
Mystery guest, would you like to identify yourself, please?
Yeah,
number one.
How are you? It's Jason Dial after telly. Oh,
I'm not quite as posh as Lloyd's generic. He's not far away. He's about 40 miles away, that's all.
Oh, that's no good. So, Jason Doyle, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. Glad good. To be along, eventually.
Well, sorry about the slight fuck-up in organising last week, but we got there eventually. Better late than never.
So, Jason, what you've been doing? We normally kick off by sort of finding out what we've all been doing. Have you been on the trigger at all since the end of lockdown?
No, I was in Ireland. I work 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off. So I got back to Ireland for a couple of weeks.
And is the male escort job, is that the 3 weeks off to recover as a male escort? Is that how it works?
Just to let things heal.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case.
Is there quite a niche for bald-headed Eastern European skulled Irishman?
You'd be surprised.
Bigger market than what you think. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
No bloody way. Well, I'm happy for you, mate. I'm happy for you. That's good.
I'll put a link to your OnlyFans in the show notes. So,
come on, don't act coy. Everybody already knows it.
But no, I've been in Ireland. She spent 5 weeks in Ireland, and I got over there for 2 weeks. So there's still no shooting over there. So we just got home the day before yesterday. So I am hoping to get out tomorrow, shoot a few plays, probably Humberside, somewhere like that. Out in the morning for a couple of hours, but really looking forward to it. Haven't shot the shotgun since, I think, December or something like that. It's a long time ago.
Yeah,
that is a long time. So, what are you most looking forward to doing, shooting-wise?
I am most looking forward to getting down to Grimstorp and just having a day out with Ed Solomons, really, because that's our nearest really good ground. I mean, we've got EJ Churchill's up here at Swinton, but I haven't been there yet. But Grimstorp Castle is excellent. It's like a couple of hours from us, and we usually, Carly and I, go down and get a half day with Ed there, and it's just super place. So we're going, I think we've booked to go on the 6th of next month when I get back from work. So we're going to get down there for a day. And that, I'm buzzing about that. Shoot some stuff off the
I'd love to get down to Grimstorp sometime. It's one of those grounds that, like, it's in my head I need to get down there, but I've not been. But sounds great.
Absolutely on my list now after seeing a few pictures.
It's like so relaxed there. Like, I love going down to Royal Berkshire and places like that, but like Royal Berkshire is crazy expensive and it's so formal. And then like Grimstorp is as nice, but way more laid back. Right. You sort of rock up and everyone knows you by name. The people that run it are...
Because you're a big deal, JD.
I know, everybody knows you by name, JD.
Yeah. We could walk on there and be like, who the fuck are these?
Are you?
Exactly.
Hello there, Mr. Doyle, sir. Keep your shoes on, sir. You have to book in advance. It's never too busy. Like, Carly doesn't like shooting in front of a crowd and stuff like that. She gets a bit nervous by it, but there's literally not one stand there where you can see any of the other stands. It's all like a nice walk around the woods, beautifully laid out. Nothing too tricky.
Is it a big ground or is it just really well architected?
It's a big ground. It's sort of, they have a corner of the estate. but they have a fit hassle layout, which you have to drive to. But the sort of sporting layout is in woods, but it's, you wouldn't know how many other people were shooting there other than you're hearing the shots. You just don't see anyone. It's beautifully laid out. And the Hightower setup is in a little glade in the wood, which is exactly the sort of place you would be standing on a pheasant drive kind of thing. It's
right.
So realistic. It's just, yeah, lovely, lovely place. You'd nip back up, have a cup of coffee, have some lunch and go out and shoot some more. It's just a really nice day out.
The good food?
We've never been since, we were never there before lockdown really. But yeah, they have a good restaurant. But they do sandwiches and stuff. What are you laughing at?
Because you're so fucking tight, you definitely take a packed lunch.
Don't even.
I can see you and Carly sharing a Lunchable. Oh, yes. Let's get a bit of Irish racism on the channel. That's where I'm about.
I just point out my
sorry, JD, carry on.
So I'm allowed.
It's like our treat. When I'm home from work, we smash it everywhere we go. We're like eating out and stuff like that. So we live like paupers. When I'm away working, Carly lives off her mum and dad. She goes to their house for tea every night.
She's learning, isn't she? She'll be a tight Irishman before long.
I can just, when I go to work, I could just plug the fridge out in the house here. And she's around her mum and dad's every night.
That's it. How's she cooking on with that young'un?
Really good, actually. Yeah, she's in really, really good form.
Cool.
Just started to feel a bit of kicking. Just this
what about week. From the baby?
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got to cut that out.
No, she's in good form. We went and had a gender scan last week in Ireland. So
no. Why? Why?
So you know what flavour you're having, so you know what paint to buy for the nursery.
Well,
the cheapest, I expect.
Why would you not want
to? If you were supposed to know, there'd be a big window. There'd be a big clear window in the guts there.
Yeah, the missus would look like a Teletubby, but she doesn't. So why'd you want to do that?
Why would you not want to know?
Oh, just because it's an amazing surprise. Yeah, really is one of the.
Well, it was a surprise until they found out. And then,
what if it's not what you really wanted?
Yeah.
And then you spend 7 months going, oh, man.
Well, it's not like you've got a choice. You're not going to go, all right, no, we'll send that one back.
It's 2021, mate. You can just make them whatever you want when they come out. Sorry,
anyway,
JD.
Bruce, have you been shooting, mate?
I have. We had our first formal competition last week. So that was the kickoff of the season. First qualifier for the state selections.
So you hit that 25.
I did. That was the first one. I've shot a lot in club competitions and compact competitions, but never in a qualifying setting. So, and just to make it even more fun, I thought, let's go live and add the mental pressure of 7 people watching. So
I did notice those targets are nice and close, those last ones, though, Bruce.
Could you see them? Could you?
No. Yeah, easy.
Yeah, they were like bin lids.
I mean, the fact you had exceptional Wi-Fi and you probably had Bruce, you had the shakes from the night before filming.
So, I wasn't filming, I was shooting, obviously.
No, the other Bruce. No, come on. The other Bruce.
I didn't shoot with the other Bruce.
Didn't you?
No, we're different squads. Different squads.
Oh, is he the A team?
He is the A team. That's right.
Yeah.
Shot well. First in grade, second overall. So I was pretty happy for that for a start.
Well done, mate.
Fair play, mate.
What's the standard like over there of targets in FITAS compared to UK or Europe?
Our FITAS targets seem to be a fraction harder than what you get there. It does seem to be, we try to, I don't know, bring the big stick out every single time. Eddie's going to get his duck call out because he's...
Fuck off, Johnny. Just fuck off, Johnny. All right?
They do seem to be a little bit tougher.
Our targets are superior.
I haven't shot a heap of FITAS in Europe, so it's very hard to really go, right, where are we at? They weren't the toughest targets I've ever shot, but they weren't the softest targets I've ever shot. So,
yeah, I've only ever shot FITAS once and really enjoyed it, but got my arse banked doing it. Like, it was so hard.
They are absolutely harder than sporting targets. I can tell you that. Yeah,
a million times.
So, what makes them harder? Just the range, is it?
Oh, distance, speed, and you only got, you're shooting one set of targets, but you never shoot that set again. So you'll walk to a pad, you'll have an A, B, a C, and maybe a D. You'll shoot 3 singles and 2 pairs, and then you walk away from them. it's not as if you're shooting five pairs of something to dial your eye in on that same five pairs of targets.
Constantly changing.
It's constantly changing. So it's more like field shooting, I would say. Like more, I would have thought you would like that more, Eddie, because it is, it simulates more a one-off bird in the field. No, you just shoot at clay targets. So you've said
we'll
no.
We'll find out tomorrow, won't we? We'll find out.
You will. What's going on tomorrow, Eddie? What are you up to? What have you been doing?
I've been invited to go clay pigeon shooting tomorrow.
You also look. You look like you're in a new abode there too. It doesn't look like
in a new house. Yeah, I am in the depths of Grandma's dungeon at the moment. No, it's
that's news.
It's my new house. It's my new house. It's on my own. Fucking win, mate. So the hookers will be around in about 20 minutes. So if I whip off, then you know what's happened. Ouch. Wow. Yeah, so I haven't done any shooting at all for... I can't remember the last time. I think the last podcast was... I'd taken some people out shooting, but I haven't done anything. Just been getting my life sorted out and moving out and working. So I haven't done anything, but I am going clay pigeon shooting tomorrow with our Lord and Saviour, however, Johnny Carter, which would be interesting.
And you've got to do his filming lined up as well, I gather.
Yeah, he wants me to take my clothes off for TGS, which is quite a big deal. Quite a big deal. He did book JD, but apparently he was double booked, so I had to fill in.
Yeah, it's not his. No, it's not his
acceptable substitute.
Don't know. I've got to bick my head and beat a couple of weird lumps into it, and I'll be there, won't I?
He's definitely got a ballistic profile on the top of his nut, like.
Yeah, ballistic politician.
A head like a 2-2 pellet.
It just means that when it's windy, that makes no noise. There's this clean passage of air over the top of his nut. You know, it's. He's basically a predator.
Oh, JD. Thanks for coming on the podcast, mate. Really appreciate it. Take care. We'll speak to you soon.
Well, look, we're just slide yourself, off. Boyd. I'm great, actually. Obviously, lockdown ended on Wednesday. I was at work on Wednesday. But I've been off since Thursday, and I've been shooting 4 days straight since the end of lockdown, really. So I've had a whizzy time. I've got some guns up from GMK. So I was out testing those Thursday, Friday at Thimbleby.
Go on, then. Go on, then. Tell us what guns they are.
Oh, I've got a 486 Parallelo and an SP1 Vittoria, which my wife's going to be testing, which is going to be... I've only shot some B-roll so far. I haven't actually had a chance to shoot the review. Plus, I need to shoot a little bit more to get behind the gun and feel how what I think of it. But yeah, that was 2 days down
it. Can you give us your first impressions of the guns, or do you have to like, share, and subscribe to Lloydy P on YouTube?
So far, getting on really well with the Parallel. It's got a pistol grip, Beavertail forend. The particular gun is just my conclusion is going to be it's sort of the ideal side by side for a clay shooter in that it doesn't suffer from the problems that I've had with other four side-by-sides. Like a while back, I tested a 471 Silverhawk, another side-by-side I've tried, especially with straight-hand stocks and double triggers and whatever. I can't be arsed. But this is such a nice sort of bridge gun almost.
So it doesn't have a toothpick for a forend.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Side-by-side barrels.
Sorry?
And over and under with side-by-side barrels.
Basically. Essentially, yeah. With all of the benefits of that sort of speed and flickability sort of thing, and it goes where you want it to go. Very nice, really impressed.
It's quite pretty as well, isn't it?
It is, it's awfully pretty. Very, very nice. Really nicely struck off barrels. The engraving's perhaps a little bit fussy, but it's really well executed. Nice bit of wood on it. It's just really nice.
Cool.
There you go. You don't have to watch the video now.
Of course we do.
I've got some B-roll in the can. I need to actually record the review. D hasn't tried the SP yet. Just time didn't work out for us on Thursday when we went out.
So we'll get out. What's the difference between that and the first Vittoria?
The first one's based on a 690 chassis.
Okay.
And then this one, they've done a 686 variant. And I think there's probably going to be a 694. Although you didn't hear that from me. But there will sure there'll be a 694.
Edit.
Oopsie. I'm sure there'll be a 694 Vittoria as well.
That's because
marketing dictates that's how it's got to go, isn't it? If you,
yeah,
you just got to keep producing more stuff that's exactly the same as the last stuff that looks different to the other stuff.
How well do these lady aimed guns sell though? I mean, I can't imagine it's a massive market, is it?
It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yep. They are absolutely selling way more at the minute.
I mean, it's money for old jam as well, because literally from the receiver back is the only place you need to make any changes. There's nout, like in front of that needs changing. It's literally like a 13.5-inch length of pole stock with an adjustable comb, a smaller radius pistol grip so that you're smaller hand. And that's about it, to be honest, the only changes you need to make.
Yeah, Carly has one of the original Vittorias, and tomorrow we're collecting the new Rosini, which is aimed at ladies as well, for her to try. But I sort of always think that, because they sort of say that they'd work well for youngsters as well. Mm. If you're a 14-year-old boy, you don't want to go into the
You're nervous enough as it is at 14. You don't need to be associated with, you're that lad that uses a chick's gun, aren't you?
Well, that's if you remember when Browning launched the Liberty, they specifically said it's for smaller people. They didn't say it's a ladies' gun. And if you look at the engraving in that, it's not like with a Caesar where it's like, you know, flowers and rainbows and unicorns and shit. The Liberty is a bit more like nondescript, just asexual, shall we say, engraving. So it's not a girl's gun. It's just a small gun.
I put my hands on one of those Caesar Julias on the weekend, actually. I was pretty impressed. Like a color case hardening base with, I suppose it's like an enamel overlay.
With the gold.
With the gold and the purple bits through it.
I'm not a fan.
I didn't mind it. I didn't hate it. For a chick's, I wouldn't shoot it. It's a girl's gun. But
yeah,
it did look quite, I did like the color case hardening.
Two days at Thimbleby, which is now reopened with a new clubhouse. I think Johnny and I are going to be doing a clear tour video there shortly. And that's a fab ground now. They've put a bunch of money into that ground. And then Bywell on Saturday, just for a bit of practice and a bit kick about. Just great to get out with some mates. And then last night I went for a stalk. First time. Got a buck.
Aye, aye.
What was their name?
On, mate, or...
Canny Chuck. Canny Chuck for that.
Hey. How did you get on with name? That? And... have you been caught by the police yet?
So I went in a guided stalk. We spent the first hour or so up in a high seat, looking down over a dike next to a field, next to some woodland, where we'd glassed some animals the day before, and just nothing came out, nothing at all. I saw like a couple of rabbits, a hare, some pheasants.
Please tell me you took a rabbit with a 243, please.
It was a 270 and no, because there wouldn't have been much left.
Exactly.
Oh, pink mist. Pink mist.
So, sat there for an hour, rabbit. Got out, walked back out, went down to another location, and we stalked down through a field again where we'd seen some animals the day before. And moved down along this sort of dike line. And saw an out, got down to another high seat that was in the far end of the field, got up the high seat and had a quick scan around with a thermal and spotted a group of 4 or 5 miles away, like underneath the tree, 2 or 3 fields across. So we jumped down and worked our way around, quite a long way around, through some like a water feature, like a riverbed, to stay out of sight, and then stalked up the side of this a riverbed, a river bank, try and get an angle on them. It was a big buck, a juvenile buck, and 2 does.
What species?
All raw. It's the only thing we got up here.
All right.
Couldn't get an angle, just couldn't get high enough. Kept moving forward, couldn't get an angle on it. And the light was starting to go. And it was the absolute death of the light. And we just said, sod it, got up on the sticks.
Fuck the backdrop.
Boom. No, there was backdrop, don't worry.
There was a dirty great big dike there, apparently.
There was some cars,
and a schoolyard.
Yeah, there was a couple of cars and an Asda car.
Greenhouses.
Yeah, there was an Asda behind it. Anyway, got up on the sticks. The basically I couldn't have got an angle on the bigger buck, but the juvenile buck had a duff antler, so it was an ideal one to take. Got the shot off, pretty good shot placement, just behind the shoulder blade.
Nice.
It went down immediately. I didn't actually see it because obviously the rifle was in recoil. When I came back down, my heart dropped because I just saw a deer stood there looking at me. But it was actually one of the does had moved forward. And John said, don't worry.
Didn't just work the bolt then and just carry on going until it dropped.
No.
Just keep stepping in place. In. Fuck, not another one. It's a big pile of eight of them dead. Fuck.
Anyhow, they all ran off. We moved forward. And there he was, dead as dead.
He'd gone well straight done, down. Mate. What was the condition of the beast? Nice?
Grand high, yeah. No, we galloped him straight away. No problems. No internal problems. I think he weighed out a shade under 13 kilos with all of the bits out.
Nice.
So he's away at the butcher and we'll get him.
Wicked.
Get him eaten next
yes.
week.
I look forward to hearing negative reviews on your YouTube about your venison teriyaki about having green peppers in it.
Putting green peppers in your teriyaki.
Well done then, mate. So you're proper buzzing off the back of that then.
Yeah, chuffed a bit. Although I left my phone in the car, so there are zero photos. Yay!
Ah, mate, fuck the phones. Who needs them? Who needs them?
Were you surprised by anything in it? Was there anything you weren't expecting?
No. No, actually, it was pretty much as I thought it would be, if you know what I mean. I've watched, like you, I've watched Meat Eater on TV enough about sort of, you know, the process of the stalk. Yeah, no, it was as I expected. I didn't get like dead nervy. I wasn't like, my heart wasn't going 90 to the dozen. I wasn't like or anything behind the rifle. So I was pretty calm. Made a good shot. It went down. And equally, I didn't have like a holy moment where I was like, oh, now I have religious experience and this is my woodland friend. And we will make complete the circle of life as I will eat you. Didn't have any of that shit. It was like, I bet.
So you didn't go full Johnny from TGS.
No, I didn't. No, yeah, I didn't. No.
You didn't get out joss sticks pull and the a incense fucking seance.
No, exactly.
Do a fucking Ouija board off the haunch. Oh, yeah. Yes. No, I feel you now. Yes.
Yeah.
That fucking long streak of piss.
No, I was pleased it was a right good clean kill. I was happy with the shot. Went down straight away. I couldn't ask for better than that, to be honest. And then now I've got a rake of venison that I'm going to eat, which I very much enjoy.
Nice. So what recipes?
Yeah, it was 270. And
suppressed?
Yes. Oh, God. Houskin mod.
Houskin Le Demper. Yeah. Best moderator on the market.
Hashtag sponsored.
Hashtag.
Yes, it was.
Hashtag no.
A Night Force.
Night Force NXS. I can't.
Oh, was it a 270 air rifle? Was it?
I 270 air rifle. Yeah.
I thought so. Yeah.
It's unusual to see cool. on a hunting rifle in this country.
Yeah, they're usually for shooting paper, aren't they, Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what we've been trying to tell Lloyd.
Well,
poor field of view and poor quality glass.
At night. Not bad during the day, but terrible.
It's okay because Lloyd didn't tell us the full story because he was hunting it off the back of a Hilux of a lamp. So it was a right.
it wasn't even a Hilux. It was just, you know, it was the bonnet of one of the cars in the car park.
Sort of Mazda. Popped in, done the weekly, and then just thought, hang on a second.
There's a deer over there, behind the bins.
So
it turns out it wasn't even the deer, it was just a stray dog.
Oh, shit.
Turns out this whole story was a ruse, and he actually just hit a deer on the way home. He's taken a heap of photos with it.
Exactly.
Well, I didn't take any photos, that's the point.
The picture you sent us yesterday with your shit-eating grin holding its head like,
that was after we'd, like, you know, had it to bits.
Hit it with the car.
There's no typical, like, you know, the one with the rifle and the deer. You know, none of that logs.
Just done a grip and grin with its tiny little immature head.
A toe head.
Like this. Lovely. I mean,
delicious.
I personally think it was a bit fucking cruel. It didn't have a chance to live and... Just because it's got a malform, it's not a valid reason to actually drop it. But if that's how you sleep at night, Lloyd, that's absolutely fine, mate.
I will sleep like a baby full of delicious venison.
Yep.
I'll make a lovely casserole with some Guinness.
And green peppers.
Probably not in the casserole, no.
Why not? You put it in your teriyaki. That's ridiculous as well.
That's valid use of green peppers, to be fair. But yes, obviously we'll get a variety of meat off the beast, so it will be cooked in various ways.
Job. Oh, well done, mate. Well done. Right, moving on. Has anybody got any field sports related news? Because this is the segment where the long streak of piss normally speaks, but he's not here. So.
I thought I'd post by the National Game Dealers Association?
Regarding the lead ban in court. Yeah.
Bringing up that they're not going to accept any lead shot game after, I think it was 1st of July next year.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, in your expert opinion, Jason, what do you think this is going to do to, 243 for a start?
I've never used copper bullets in a 243. I've used them quite a lot in a 270. Mm. And it's a funny one. Like some of the stuff I've used, like I've probably shot getting on for 500 deer with copper bullets. And I've had certain ones and you shoot 8 or 10 deer at a certain range and you think these are awesome. And then you change the range slightly and they're absolutely useless. And I think that that's where the copper seems to highlight more that certain bullets are specific for certain ranges and certain scenarios. And I think the same is true to a certain extent with lead, where some bullets are better for longer range, bigger animals, and some bullets work better at short range. But I think it was Barnes TTSX I had, I think it was them that SACO were loading some factory rounds for, because I don't reload in Ireland. It's very difficult to reload. You can't do it at home or anything like that. So it's a ball ache. Mm. So we're restricted to factory ammo. And I had some of these SACO bullets, 110 grain. And I shot 8 or 10 deer, sort of sub 200 yards, and they were brilliant. And then I shot one at about 250 yards, and I thought I'd missed it. And I hit it perfectly, and it ran 200 yards.
Really?
And luckily, it was on open hill and I could see it all the way. But just when the speed was scrubbed off that bullet a little bit, absolutely crap. Just chatted to a guy last week in Scotland, Sam Thompson. I don't know if you follow him on Instagram. He's a professional stalker. But he's been using their Barnes, I think they're LRX bullets. They're these kind of ones that mushroom, they break into petals, and he's been having really good results with them. So I'm going to try and get some of them to try. But I'm determined to, from next season in Ireland, our season kicks off in September, I'm determined to go copper only with my deer stalking. And rather than chopping and changing, and as soon as you have one bad experience, going back to your old faithful lead, I'm going to
persist with it and work out the sweet spot.
We're going to have to. And like it, the reason I always went back to lead was it's for good reason. You have two or three bad experiences with a copper bullet and you go, why am I using something that's substandard when I don't have to? Because I've lost deer because I've used copper, or you've shot one at 50 yards and nailed it straight through the shoulders and it hasn't knocked it over because the bullet didn't expand or something like this. So I think we need to rather quickly now get our house in order and find what works best.
Well, do you not think that the ammo manufacturers are going to get on the ball if they know that it's no longer a choice? They're going to have to improve the ballistic performance and the terminal performance of the bullets at, you know, various ranges in order for people to effectively use them, right? Or you're just not going to...
I think they already are, aren't they? I think they're shitting themselves fairly quickly to get something adequate out on the market to avoid the scenario that JD was just talking about.
Well, the ballistic performance of copper has always been phenomenal, and accuracy is phenomenal. But it's the terminal performance that I've had the issue with. And it's the inconsistency. As I said, you have a bullet that performs really, really well from 150 to 200 yards, but sub that and more than that, like it just doesn't work well. And I think, yeah, there needs to be more research done into that. But you see, the problem with this is most of the big money from bullet manufacturing comes from the States. And at the moment, they're just concentrating fully on pumping out as much stuff as they can.
Mega ammo shortage in the States at the minute.
And I don't, as far as I'm aware, there's no chat about them moving to copper, so they're not going to put a massive amount of research into improving copper bullets.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky one, but I think it will become a case where some people will have to move away from the calibers that they're used to using to have something that specifically works better with non-toxic. Same with shotguns. I mean, might end up having to do away with 28 bores and stuff like that in certain scenarios.
Yeah.
I mean, the situation that I'm in at the moment is I made a decision a couple of months back just to move over to strictly steel for everything.
Yeah.
And I've hit this plateau where, well, up until the last couple of times, I couldn't hit a cow's ass with a banjo with steel. And I'm just thinking, sod it. Should I just go and get some holes super fast and stick to what I know? I know I can hit with them. And it's been a real moral thicket to go, well, actually, no. Like, I've decided I was going to do this. I've got to stick to this. And then just change my shooting style, my method, and my ranges till I get used to shooting this specific brand of steel shot, which are good. And I've seen some exceptionally good kills of them. But
what is the difference? What's happening that wouldn't happen with lead?
Ability. Just shut up. Honestly. I'm trying to be fucking serious for the first time on this podcast, you ginger twat. Shut up. And so I was using this particular brand. I got loaned a box of them, or given a box of them to try out when I first heard of them. And I absolutely skinned a pigeon, took the parson's nose off, basically took everything off it, and it carried on flying bold. I'm like, these are a crock of shit. And then the very next one, I shot at easily 40, 45 yards and killed it with a wad. I'm like, well, hang on a second. This is two ends of the spectrum here. What's going on? I think they've sorted them out because the next slab I bought of them did kill really well. And they were a 32 grams of 5 in a steel shot. And I was dropping big rooks at, 45, 50, 55 yards. So there just seems to be such a variant in the quality from box to box, as opposed to them having a nice mean average and you being able to work within those parameters, if it makes sense. So, I mean, I'm generally a shit shooter. So if I drop anything, I'm surprised before any of you fuckers say it.
I think, though, at the end of the day, it's change. And generally, the shooting industry doesn't like big changes. So there's going to be a period where we're just having to get used to, you know, what we're talking about here with the different sort of rifle calibers with steel and shotguns. There's definitely just going to be an uneasy period where we get used to what is effective, what works for us, and what we can and can't kill with them. So,
yeah, and it's a tricky one because nobody can turn around and say that steel is ever going to be better than lead.
No.
It's just not. It's not possible. But I do think that there's a little bit too much scaremongering done by a small percentage of people who it's going to affect massively, because for the majority of people, it's not really going to make that much of a difference to what we can kill, because most of the stuff that we shoot at or that I shoot at, I'll be able to kill with steel. And every time I've used steel, I've always been really prepared to be disappointed in how my shooting has deteriorated and how my ability to kill stuff has vanished and all this. But I've always been really surprised that I just shoot as normal, it kills as normal. And I'm obviously not killing stuff as far away as I thought it was with lead, because I've just nailed that, what I thought was a 55, 60 yard pigeon, and I've just absolutely ragged it with a 32 gram 4 steel cartridge. So,
and that's the problem with shooters. It's never as far away as what it actually is.
100 yard pigeon. And it was coming in. I paced it 100 yards and it was coming in on a pattern.
How many times have you been out pigeon shooting and you shoot a massive long crossing pigeon and you think, oh, that's fallen beyond that hedge, and it falls 15 yards this side of the hedge?
I like it when you take shooters out and you're like, right, see that telegraph pole over there? And they're like, yeah. How many yards away is that? And they go, oh, I don't know, 80 yards. And you pace it out and it's like 60. It's like that. You need to get your fucking measurements sorted
out.
It's
normally more pronounced than that, to be honest. If you ask somebody, is that, what's 100 that? Yards, 100 yards. And it's 100 like 50.
Yeah.
We put a drone up at Paul Childerly's at the Jack Pike shoot last year. We put a drone up, and you can obviously see on the screen how far away it is. and took all the shooters out one at a time and asked them how far away it was. And we went from, I think it was 42 yards to 100 yards was the...
Fucking hell. And how far away was it?
It was like 80. And Dan Thor got spot on. He was bang on the money with what he guessed.
Yeah. Well, even a stop clock's right twice a day, you know.
And it was... Andy Crowell...
Sorry, Dan, I've never met you, mate.
That was exquisite of you, mate. That was exquisite.
Yeah. But Andy still reckons he could have shot it at whatever range it was. And unfortunately, it wasn't my drone, because if it was my drone, I would have probably had a bet with him. I think a stationary drone at 82 yards with a 32 gram six, I think, would have been safe enough.
Yeah.
No way.
I think with a quarter choke, I don't think you'd hit it.
You don't think so?
Like, the drone is maybe a foot across, 6 inches deep.
Yep.
I don't think you'd put many pellets on that at 82 yards.
Hey, I need to do the calculation from yards to meters.
Is it
2 meters?
Yeah.
72?
Yeah, something like that.
Bruce is thinking, right. If I go extra full on this, I'm dusting this motherfucker.
Jason, no, do you hunt in meters in your head, or do you hunt in yards?
I do both, because I work in yards, but when I was a professional stalker, deer stalker in Ireland, all the European clients work in meters.
Yeah.
So you're constantly...
How far did you say it was? 82 yards.
Yeah.
It's 74 meters. Now, I know from a fact that I've hit a 74-meter... bird, a springing teal off the hip, measured at a national championship to win a slab of shells.
However, a moving target has got to be much easier to break than a stationary target.
The propellers are still splitting, though. If you put a pellet through a propeller...
Back in your box, Bruce. Get back in your box.
If you have the clay moving and the pattern moving, you have much more chance of something intersecting.
Something going at something.
Yeah. If you
fight.
I don't think you're going to hit it. But next time you're in England, we'll test the theory.
Oh, I'd love to have a go.
A great drone shoot of 2022.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait for you to get together.
I'll get DJI to sponsor it. Like,
I'll have 100 quid on with you that you can't shoot my drone with a 32 gram six at 82.
With a half choke at 82 yards.
If you hit it, you win £100, but then you have to buy him a new drone.
Yeah.
Which costs £2,500. Hey, details.
We can't film it because I'll have to lie to my insurance company afterwards.
So, JD, is there any more Field Sports Ireland on the cards?
Yes. I've actually just filmed a pilot. We're sort of trying to go a different direction with it. Because I'm obviously not in Ireland much anymore, but there is still an appetite for Field Sports Ireland. People write in
100%, 100%, yeah.
But yeah, we've had every time I do a Instagram question and answer thing, like literally you get five or six people, different people every time going, when are you going to do more Field Sports Ireland stuff? And it does encourage me to do it. And I've spoken to the Field Sports guys. And unfortunately, with all these things, it is down to my time and then the cost of doing it and the cost of using their platform, which isn't free. I can't just expect them to put my stuff up for nothing. They're running a business. So we have some ideas of doing it a little bit different, doing it more like a kind of a diary kind of thing, rather than focusing a film on just going out and setting up in a hide and shooting pigeons for the day. I want to make it much more about what are you doing the day before to get ready for that, and the gear you're going to use, getting packed up for it.
Sorry, I was looking at Eddie thinking, I wonder how Eddie gets ready for this. Drink cider. That's it, really. That's it.
most of the questions I get asked on Instagram and Facebook and stuff are about, like, how do you know where you're going to set up your hide, and how do you know which is the right day to shoot pigeons, and like, what gear do you use at certain times of year, and all this. And it's, you're answering those questions all the time. So there is an appetite for it. Like, I mean, probably 80% of people know this stuff. but like you're always, I'm always trying to have one eye on people that maybe aren't into shooting or don't know how to do it or don't do it much. And you're always trying to encourage people into the sport and to do it more. Yeah. So I'd focus on all the prep, getting ready the night before, like getting all your stuff out, like what sort of seat you're going to have, what sort of jackets you're going to bring, all that.
Leaving your shotgun and cartridges by the front door so you don't forget them, because there's nothing more embarrassing.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Or just leave it in the car.
Yeah, exactly, with the window open, so your gun doesn't fucking sweat. That's
exactly.
But then going on from that, like getting more into the food end of it and what you do with the stuff when you've shot it, when you bring it home, how you prepare it, and not going too fancy about it. Like,
fucking stick them in the microwave, give them 25 minutes, take them out, fucking eat it, like it, sort it.
Yeah, but being able to do stuff that anyone could do at home, like 3 or 4 ingredients, like not going, anyone can make things look fucking fancy when you've loads of time to prep and all that kind of stuff. But like getting home with your pigeons, and if you just want to eat some, just quickly chuck it on the barbecue, or just really basic stuff, but not making it look too fancy. Just
make it accessible. Don't make it look like it's come from a restaurant and you need 35 quid to make a 1 pound pigeon taste nice.
Exactly. And make it look easy that anyone can say, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. Because like I love watching cookery programs. Do I ever fucking try and make anything that Gordon Ramsay's made? No.
No, never. I tell you what you need to do, mate. You need to like, share, and subscribe to Somerset Hunters YouTube channel, because that's the direction I'm going. Yes. Seamless.
I'm sure there will be loads of content on there any second now.
Tumbleweed, anyone?
Right.
There we go, horrible bastards.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You know what? I'm going to spend...
Get myself a pigeon. I'm going to wrap it in, bud. I'm going to throw it in the fire. I'm going to throw the pigeon away.
I'm not Irish, and I'm not a gypsy. Are you slagging me or JD? I'm not sure.
Oh, hang on. Whoa, hang on.
Hello.
Who is this?
Absolutely 100% on time, Johnny Carter.
We said quarter past.
However.
One, however. Right? Isn't that the rule? However.
Where are you? What? Why is your audio like that?
However, your audio is terrible once again.
Are you in the drive-thru, McDonald's?
I am actually in McDonald's drive-thru, because if I don't eat, I'm going to be hangry in a podcast, and me and Eddie will fall out inevitably, and that will lead to me and Bruce falling out, and then only me and Lloyd will be friends, which is probably the most autistic friendship ever. Right.
That would be tragic.
Johnny, just go and sort your audio out and come back.
I will sort my audio out and then come back.
Okay. Cheers, princess.
It's been going so well without him as well.
I know. This is going to be our first successful podcast. However, Johnny Cards are returned.
Johnny comes, and however mucks it up.
Have you not left yet? Come on, just go. Just go.
I can't just mute him, you know.
Just mute him. Mute him until he gets his Happy Meal.
Done.
That's better, isn't it? I've never realised how much better life is without...
we don't have to listen to the English Yoda that is Johnny Carter.
So, I mean, I would love to see some of your pigeon recipes. Pigeon and spam, pigeon and egg, pigeon, spam and egg. Spam, pigeon egg, and mushroom. Pigeon, spam and egg.
Talking to me or...
Pigeon and toast.
Yeah, I was going to say...
Eddie, obviously.
I'm not the guest. All questions should be directed at JD.
No, we were just talking about Ireland.
We're going to be doing baked potato with pigeon. Next week, we'll be doing fried potato with pigeon. You're like an Irish Bubba Gump with shrimp. That's all you are, mate.
You're only able to get like one
pigeon potato. We can do mashed potato with pigeon.
What you're missing is a carpaccio of potato and pigeon.
Why is he not muted? You're upsetting me now.
Is your speciality a pigeon that's been drowned in cider? I've got a bone to pick with you bastards.
It is
on the podcast that you told me that Hex Cider was a life-changing experience.
It is. It changed your life for the worst.
On that basis, I ordered 10 litres of port wine of Glastonbury, and what turned up was 10 litres of that pink mouthwash you get when you're at the dentist.
It's not pink, it's the fucking amber nectar, you miserable Geordie twat.
It might be that colour, but it tastes like fucking mouthwash.
Do you know what upsets me? I've given it away. Me, right? is I used to watch Lloyd P shooting on YouTube and actually hold your evaluation of guns in high regard. But now I realise you have no taste and you can't actually see the wood for the trees. All of your videos are now null and void, in my opinion.
No, what it is, is I didn't grow up in some fucking yokel-ass redneck bullshit zone of England, and all of my taste buds were burnt out by drinking rad water and fucking whatever else.
It's not made in the north, mate. This is a southern drink.
It is very exactly. much a southern drink.
If you weren't brought up on a council estate with glue bags and cheap pills, then you'd actually have taste buds to appreciate good cider.
That's what it is.
I'm actually really looking forward. I'm looking forward to this this YouTube channel you've got there, Eddie, on how to cook a pigeon. Just the one.
So I popped out and ethically and sustainably picked up one pigeon.
One pigeon.
You know, that fucking four-eyed twat Ed Solomons has proper done me a mischief. I went out a couple of weeks after the podcast and I dropped three pigeons and I was like, I was going to take a picture of this, but I know Solomons is going to be laughing in his dad's castle, so I can't fucking take this picture and post it, can I? Miserable twat. So now, if I don't get a bag of anything less than 10, then I'm fucking leaving it.
That's why his
wife... I think he'd still laugh.
His Wi-Fi...
Of course he would.
Castle walls are too thick.
I didn't hear what you said there, mate. Sorry.
Sorry, I'm just looking at the arm movements, and either he's stroking the dog or he's giving somebody next to him a wank. Stroking the dog, it's alright.
Someone needs a super vet. I don't know what JD's done to that dog.
You bored him to sleep.
Is that what it is? Sure, dulcet Irish tones, JD.
I honestly think walkies. Your dog's broken, JD.
Walkies! 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 Howie. Come by.
It's not a fucking Geordie dog. He didn't like recruit it from, you know, Wild's End.
How is Phantom anyway?
He's grand. He's missed me the last 4 days, apparently. Apparently he's been wandering the house looking for me while I've been out. And bless him, of course, it's the first time I've been away since we got him. So, yeah.
Oh, so.
He doesn't know what to do with himself.
There's going to be lots of dogs out there like that. Honestly, there'll be so many pets walking around now that the lockdown's semi-over, going... Mm.
Where's my human gone? Where's my human?
What the hell is going on? So, welcome to the podcast. Johnny Carter joining us from, by the looks of it, the TGS.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. So, just to give you a quick catch-up on where we are, Jason has been telling us just how wrong you are about 6.5 Creedmoor at great length.
This is why I arrived late, because I was going to be fucked for an argument with him, to be honest. I always knew that Marriage of His was a cover.
Basically, I'm the only... I've been shooting a lot. Nobody else has. What have you been doing for the last week?
This last week? So we decided on a bit of a whim, when we were given a date to reopen, we decided to completely refurb the shop. So I've been working my bollocks off to refurb the shop and to reorganise all of the dates and appointments we had now that we have a time that we can actually work from. So, yeah, that's been pretty much my all-consuming week, is deciding what colour to paint shit.
Also, it looks like you've been trying to cut your own hair there.
No, this was a Charlie Day job, the country mum.
Straight, she's done something with flippers. It.
Okay.
You know, actually, Johnny, I actually really quite like that.
Thank you, mate.
I you look like a white skinny Mr. T.
So this.
Quite jealous.
Are we still recording? we're still recording, aren't we?
We are recording. Yes.
All right. Okay. Yes. I won't say nothing then.
Johnny's is like the exact opposite of mine.
We came together. I did a bit of Photoshop. We could have a hell of a head of hair.
Yeah, lots found happen. Nothing on the sides to mine.
JD, if I send you a mullet wig, will you wear it next time you're on YouTube?
Yes.
Thanks, mate. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for being on the podcast, mate.
What's the 6.5 Creedmoor deal? What's going on about that?
We have a long-standing... Johnny thinks 6.5 Creed is for mall ninjas and wankers. And I've got one on my ticket.
Why would you have one?
Because I think it will be a useful caliber given the prevalence of copper ammo.
I bought one just...
to prove how shit they were.
Yes.
Hang on a fucking second. Right? There was a couple of videos I was watching you, and I was like, "Oh, that fucking potato headed fuck is like balls deep in 6'5".
No,
and now you've gone back on.
No, actually watch it, because I did one and I shot a deer and it ran away like I'd missed it. I actually genuinely thought I'd missed it. It ran about 50 yards and fell over dead, shot through the heart. Then, because that wasn't conclusive, we shot a stag, and it did kill the stag quite well. But I did quite a lot. I've done quite a lot with 6.5s in general over the year, but 6.5 Creedmoor, 6.5 Swedish, they're bought, in my opinion, with factory ammunition, absolutely crap at killing deer. Other than... get 120.
Yes, I was really upset. I thought we were going to have an argument.
Mate. No,
I was kidding. I was going to have to break you two up. I really did.
I would.
But I tell you what, if you put a night force on one, they kill paper amazing.
I killed that bullseye.
If I had to have one gun and you offered me a Creedmoor or a 243, I would take a 243 every day of the week. I think it is a more versatile gun that kills most deer better with the range of factory ammunition we have available.
Okay, with copper ammunition, what would you take?
I've never used copper in either of them. So I can't.
Cool answer. Thanks for your time, JD.
Now, for targets, like I've used a Creedmoor doing PRS shooting, and yeah, it was lovely. But in a lightweight stalking rifle, I don't see any great lack of recoil in it. It still kicks quite a lot, definitely more than a 243, nearly as much as I would say, 25% less than a 270, but... why would you just not have something flatter and faster? I just don't get the Creedmoor thing at all.
So well, this is not where I thought the podcast was going to go this afternoon.
No.
I thought it was going to be handbags at dawn.
Like Lloyd can come along, call themselves super stalkers and have a sniper rifle. That's why.
I think the 6.5 bullet...
Look at Carter's face. Look at his fucking smug face.
We can't see it anymore because his head is bigger than the fucking camera.
I would like to try a 6.5 PRC because I think with that extra speed, it might make it a better killing caliber.
Yeah, 6.5, 284, that kind of thing. There are some all right 6.5 heads, but for the most part...
I think they need to be big enough. They need to be pushing... higher than 3,000 foot per second to be effective with 140 grain ballistic tips, stuff like that, or as near to 3,000 as you can get them. But pushing them at 2.6, 2.7, it doesn't work. They don't kill well.
Fair enough.
That's my the guy I stalk Seeker with in Ireland. He's probably the biggest Seeker outfitter in Ireland for the last 25 years. He will not let clients come with any 6.5 calibers. He banned clients coming 6.5.
I know a fair few people who've banned all 6.5s on their ground.
And it's just down to the amount of deer that were being lost shot with a 6.5.
Interestingly, the guys I know, they banned them because of the people that own them.
Well, there's that as well.
Well,
It's the same demographic that owns laminate shotguns though, isn't it?
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, here we go.
No, it's not. It's sort of demographic. That's... I mean, it's not the same, but it's... yeah, I'm not going to say
it. They're turbocharged Honda drivers that sit around the car park at McDonald's.
Or the cunts that are cleaning their cars outside my fucking house now.
Oh, he's getting ever so proprietary about his new house.
Oh, you wait till I get my cabinet and I'm going to let a couple of shots across the bow. Fucking hell, that bastard.
Yeah, the police like it when you do that.
I do. I've got a catapult as well. I bought it from TGS, so it's going to be all right. I'll fucking nail them right in their skinny jeans.
I know that not to be true, so not ever. Because I wouldn't sell those catapults, luckily enough for me in this case. Political lawsuit that's going to happen in this moment.
So, you've redone the shop out, Johnny?
Yeah, no, not yet.
Or in the process of?
I got 5 days left to do it. I'm about to get in a lorry and go and pick up a load of new custom-built clothing racking from a mate of mine who's knocked it all up, which is quite exciting. Lots of paint, lots of filling, lots of moving of guns and new lighting going in next week, complete new lighting going in. It's going to be really nice.
Cool.
Oh, I look forward to coming down to Botley and stealing shit.
Oh, mate, in this darkish light that we're going in as well, you'll be able to sneak around, your hoodie up, your catapult on.
My Lloyd EP hoodie. Yeah. My Lloyd EP hoodie as well.
You let us all available on Teespring whilst you pinch.
I do a lot of stuff in that Lloydy P hoodie, actually.
Well, it's got those
pockets. I've had a good time in that hoodie.
It's got the pockets that you can put stuff that you've nicked in. Dead easy. Ideal shoplifting.
It's designed by Lloyd. What would you expect?
Nothing makes it wetter than a Lloydy P hoodie.
I've got a serious question for Jason while we've got him on too. Fine having to film all these events and filming your field sports stuff takes the fun away from what you're actually doing sometimes?
Short answer is yes. But long answer is it makes it a much different experience that you can equally get as much or if not more fun out of. Yeah, there's some of the things when things don't go right and you're like you're under pressure because you've paid a cameraman to come out with you and you have a deadline or something like that, it does take the enjoyment away from just being out and hunting or shooting because you have to get something, you have to perform. But I think it's
do you not find that I watch a lot of Randy Newberg stuff, the American bloke.
Yeah.
And they seem to show a lot of those failures. Now to me that's realistic of hunting. Not every trip is great, and they show a lot of it, which then portrays hunting in the exact light that the hunter sees it as, is yep. Every trip's not perfect.
I totally agree with you, and I watch your stuff, and I really like it, but I think it's very much how the series has been set up and how everything is funded. If sponsors are happy just to be associated with something that you're going to chuck something out every week, then whatever you're doing that week, you chuck it out. Whether you hit or miss or fail or succeed. But a lot of the stuff that we do, say we're doing a series of five or six films for a rifle manufacturer or for a shotgun manufacturer, they are paying you to promote their product and not so much promote it, but to use it in the environment it's designed to be used in. So they want to see it being used or they're wasting their money basically. So if you go out and with cartridges and don't shoot anything, there's not much point in putting that film out if the cartridge company are paying for it. So it's, I agree with what you're saying. And that's going back to what I was saying earlier. That's more like what I'd like to get into is to kind of have approved partners that no matter what you're doing, you film it and chuck it out and it's more realistic and makes it more accessible and shows it warts and all. Because it's not 100 bird day, every pigeon day you go out and it's.
Yeah, I think that's the light it needs to be portrayed in sometimes is, you know what, you can go on public land hunts and you can hunt things and it doesn't always go right and you don't always come home with something.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's just we need to adjust the way that we speak to brands about it and the way that brands want it. Because if I go to a rifle manufacturer and say I want to do, we have an idea to do five stalking films where I go around the UK and shoot five different species of deer using your rifle. And the first three films, you don't shoot anything.
They're not going to be buzzing for the last two, are they?
Well, the problem is suddenly you have to be doing a much higher level of production, which is going to cost you a lot more money, them a lot more money, to make it a more passable episode, seeing as you're not killing anything, which inevitably those who won't care about the quality just kind of want to see the death. It's a really difficult mixture. Yeah. Like,
so. It's so hard to get that balance. And I mean, I've put out pigeon shooting videos where we've shot like 20, which would really not make a very exciting day, but we put it out to show that you can't get it right every time. Like, and some people who won't watch it because
it's... I'll take 20 birds.
Is this why you're not sponsored, Eddie? Because no one wants to see failure after failure after failure.
It's because I say cunt too much, Johnny. You've already established this.
Ah, yes.
Look in the mirror.
Oi.
But there's another thing. Obviously, I think there are people that really strive for a really quality production. Definitely, you know, TGS, you know, Jason, I've seen your films there. They're really, really well made. I like to think that I strive to sort of make the best I can. I mean, I'm a lone outfit. I don't have any help. No, I wasn't going to say that. I'm only Todd. I do everything myself. So I do the best I can with what I've got. But equally, there are people just making absolute garbage that yet are still popular.
TSC. So,
I think if you're a
jump, Eddie, it's a bit of a leap.
But you know,
if you're a non-hunter, you want to see those kill shot after kill shot. But if you're a hunter, you fully understand. You watch a film that may be half an hour long, that there isn't a result in, because you understand that that's the way it goes.
And it's because not we've all been about, there. We've all been there a hundred times. And you've gone out for a stalk, gone out for a shoot, and you put in all the reconnaissance, you've done all the legwork, and it just doesn't come together. So,
and sometimes it's that's the enjoyment for me personally, is it's not about the journey. That final kill. It's the whole journey of it, of being in the bush and everything that goes with it is the fun bit.
It's a bit different.
The icing on the cake is the kill.
But I think that's like, 20 years ago, if you were watching YouTube videos on hunting, you'd probably only want to see stuff getting knocked over. And I think you have to cater for people from everywhere. I mean,
evolution of taste.
Yeah, but if you asked all five of us what's our favorite movie, like, you're going to get five different answers. So
bullshit. We're going to say Top Gun. Yes.
We're all going to like different things.
Here's a prime example for you. Earlier on in the podcast, and we were asking Lloyd about how he got with the stalk last night. What was the biggest proportion of the story? It was the lead up to the kill shot.
Yeah.
The kill shot was the smallest, but it was a journey. Yeah. He told us about the meander in the river, the bank, the terrain he was on. He told us the whole fucking story to build that picture, because it's not just about the 2 seconds when you pull the trigger, the bullet's flying, and the beast is down.
Yeah. Because so once a year, you can show, doesn't it? You can pull out a video of 5 minutes of kill shots.
But equally, if you were to make a porn video and then just omit the money shot, it'd be weird, wouldn't it? Just stop.
I Google that all the time. I don't know what you're talking about.
Just a dose load of facials. You're going to be like, hang on a second. It's got a bit boring now.
But it there's
although JV's taking his trousers off now, so he's
you go through that process, but I think people want to see the successful harvest at the end, right?
Yeah,
I want to see
not every time.
Guy not get what he's after.
Do you know what annoys me? Right, is like regarding like the Instagram side of things. Is you'll see these relatively large hunting accounts. I say relatively large. They are large hunting accounts because the demographic is so small. And they'll show a picture of them there with a pile of 100, 200, 300 pigeons or whatever it was, and they'll be like, and these are all off to the game dealer. But they don't follow it through and give the full story of the game dealer accepting them, the game dealer prepping them. And it's kind of like, it's bookend with, I killed these, it's done. Now it's somebody else's problem. Does that make sense? It's kind of, it pisses me off a little bit. I think that there should be full disclosure and full accountability for what we do. If it's an account of a certain size, not like yours, Bruce, when nobody fucking follows you, but like a sensible size account. So that's just how I fucking feel about it anyway.
Yeah.
Now it's got awkward.
I think it's different. In the UK, certainly, it's not quite the same. Telling a story where you don't get something in the UK is not quite as majestic as...
In the Rockies.
Flute.
I've done all right with it.
If you're in America or Australia, in bush, up in the mountains, you can make a pretty majestic film without shooting a damn thing. Stalking around... Northumberland, Hampshire, it's not like the most wild, beautiful place to go and say, well, we walked down this field edge and we didn't shoot something today.
So okay,
it's a very hard film.
I'll get that.
I will
understand that, yeah. Yeah. We could do a three-day hunt and drive for thousands of kilometres to not get something that would make a great film.
That's the other thing. Most of our outings in the UK are a couple of hours, whether it's shopping, max a couple of hours.
Yeah, not a week.
Yeah, so it's hard to get really excited about the prep for that, because most guys will just go, oh, it stopped raining, I'm going to nip out around the fields for a couple of hours. So it's
difficult. That's not
how it's in
Australia. Pussy. It becomes, it's a little bit unromantic what we do in England. Certainly Scotland's got it a little bit easier, and Ireland. I think there's a little bit more beauty, and you can camp out and embellish, certainly, but there's a difficulty with showing unsuccessful hunts in the UK.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, fair changing call. The subject,
did you, mispronounce that there, Johnny?
Unsuccessful cunts in the UK. Welcome,
welcome to the new
Hunters.
Latest TGS series. Unsuccessful cunts.
So changing the subject, but slightly. So me and JD have a common friend in the good man is Steve G. And so this Stephen fellow is the local gamekeeper on the shoot I'm part of. And he knew JD way back when. So I rang Steve and I said, Steve, so I do this podcast with Blood Bell Ends on it. And we've got our Lord and Savior, Jason Doyle, coming on. Have you got any stories about JD that I can broadcast? And he said, fuck no, because he'll know they'll come from me. Which really upset me. Really upset me. I was like, JD has no moral compass. It's fine. It's all right. Don't worry about it. And he goes, no, I can't do that to him. He's a good lad. I was like, yeah, but your friendship isn't the same as my friendship with JD. And I will pay you £100 to spill the beans on JD. And he was like, go away, Ed. And I was like, for fuck's sake. So I have no gossip on you, JD, because Stevie G is loyal to you.
I don't think Mr. Gregory would have any wild stories about me, to be fair.
Okay, so the point of me saying Stevie G makes no fucking odds now he's got his surname as well.
Well, is he in the witness protection scheme or something?
He is. Apparently there was some sex scandal happened over in Ireland when he was younger with some undie keeper.
That would cost you more than 100 quid to get that out of him.
Not at all. He's fucking shared the fucking the trail cam footage of me already. So I don't wanna...
Was that before or after he was drummed out of the priesthood?
He's an interesting loose connection. I did a work experience placement with Stevie G. When I was at college, yeah. Actually,
no bloody way.
There is my not quite claim to fame.
Did he touch you as well?
He did, to be fair. He gave my head first, which was really depressing. He said, I want you like Jason. I was like, I don't want to be like Jason. I want to be Johnny. And he pushed me all over. And asked me to talk at half speed in a funny accent.
Did he give you a t-shirt with the name Jason on it and just insist that from that day forth you will be called Jason?
Did he put on a beige shower cap and just say, like, wear this really tight? Oh, good times. Good times. Well, Johnny, you know I said about coming down to the Pigeons?
All
right. Yeah, Stevie G is the gamekeeper.
Bloody hell.
So we can rekindle that fire and I can film it this time.
Bring in a memory lane.
This week on TGS, Johnny doesn't quite get fisted by David Florence.
Plus 5 inches off my leg. Lose 3 stone.
Good old Stevie G.
So he can finger me in a pigeon hide.
Should we run through a few of the standard questions that we do with everyone else? When we have them on
can
the
I go
show
for a piss while she boys do this?
We have standard questions.
Oh, we sort of do.
Go on, then,
every now and again.
Do you like tossing midget?
No. favorite game to shoot, Jason?
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry.
I feel a bit pretentious saying grouse because I don't really get to do it that often.
Oh, you twat.
Yeah, but if you've done it once and it's your favorite, then it's your favorite.
Yeah, grouse. Grouse, I'm afraid. Grouse. Anything wild? I don't want to say gross. I say anything wild.
Anything wild? Only because I've never shot gross.
Yeah. Question 2: do you have a foreskin?
This is important because there's a whole team thing going on, right?
There's a whole team thing going on here, Jason.
He doesn't have a foreskin.
Ah, yes. Oh, damn! We're outnumbered again, Boyd.
Oh well.
What is that? So, whose team is he on? If he shoots Barazzi, but has a foreskin.
I think he can just go in and be honest. Yeah. He's a free agent. He's available for pickup.
Favorite caliber of yours?
270.
270?
Yeah.
Favorite shotgun that you've ever shot?
Boss over and under.
Cool.
Ooh,
set the bar high with your grouse and your boss.
Yeah.
Ribless bath over and under, it was pretty nice. I didn't think I'd like it, but it was, yeah, kind of special.
I didn't realise Ireland had royalty.
Do you have a favourite hunting experience that sticks in your mind that is just, that'll be a memory for life?
New Zealand.
T'was amazing.
Is that excellent? Thanks. So you went to New Zealand one time. Brilliant. And that was the broken gun, everybody. Cheers.
A luxury time it was too, gentlemen.
What did you hunt in New Zealand? Because I've got a little bit of a hard on for hunting tar in New Zealand. It's on my list.
I went with one of my best buddies just for a week tar hunting. Yeah, and I wanted to do it. Public land, foot hunt, all this kind of stuff. I had all this these ideas that was the only way to do it. And yes, I still stick by that. I'm very glad that we did it on public land, but fuck, it was tough. Tough going.
Yeah. Helicopter in or walk in?
We choppered in to the first spot on the west coast. And then
on the South Island?
Yeah. Then we got knackered there with wind or with weather. And then we choppered into the next place down near Twizel. We were running on a tight budget, so coming out there, then we walked. So it was like a 25k walk down a river valley. And yeah, that was soul destroying.
Tough.
The boys hunted the next day. I had to take a break. My feet just weren't up to it. I massively underestimated how fit I'd need to be to go with a professional hunting guide and a army ranger. My buddy I went with was in Irish Special Forces at the time. And I hunt with him in Ireland a lot. And I'm thinking, yeah, I can stick with him all day. But like after 7-8 days, it's like a different...
You just want to lie there and like, everything hurts.
I cried. There was one point we were coming down off a mountain because we were like, you climb up as steep as you can during the day and because the tar bed down where you can't see them. And then you sort of hope that when they're feeding down in the evening, you're in the right place. But we were in one spot and it was dark and the guys decided to head back to the camp. And I remember just looking at my GPS and it was like 3.5 miles back to camp. My legs were complete jelly, just with a head torch down this real steep mountain. The two boys got out on a scree slope and just sort of skied all the way down it for a while. And I was just shattered. I was at like rock bottom thinking this is going to be 2 hours. And I just can't do it. I was like, I'm just going to fall and they'll have to get a helicopter and they'll have to come and rescue me. And I was like,
wow.
It was, yeah, we'd been there like 6-7 days at the time. I remember having tears in my eyes going, I just don't want to be here. And then my buddy who's in the army, Will, he'd waited and he was just like sat on a rock in the dark and I didn't see he was there. And all of a sudden he was like, there, come on, you're doing great. Come on, it's only another hour. Like, and come on. And it was just that enough of a pick up. And I remember just... at the end of it, getting the flight home, just kind of going like, fucking hell. That's one of those things that in years to come, I'll absolutely love it. Love the fact that I'd done it. While I was there, I fucking hated it most of the time.
I was going to say, do you look back that on now and go, wow, that was one of the greatest hunting experiences I've ever had? Because it contains all these emotions of highs and lows. Yeah. And
What was interesting for me was like, I've never done anything tough. Like, yeah, we all think we've done fucking difficult shit, but until you go out of your comfort zone and do that, like and live in a tent on a mountain for 10 nights, and we were climbing sort of vertical 1,000 meters a day to get up to where these tar were, and then climbing wasn't a big deal. It was coming down at night, at like -2, -3 degrees, and you're just using a headlight, and it was so soul destroying because you couldn't see the end goal. You were just focused on your little torchlight, what you could see, the next rock in front of you, and it was the nearest I've ever got to what you see these army guys do when they're doing like their military training, when they break them down. But you have to keep going. Like, I'm not saying what I did was anything like that, but to me, it's the toughest.
The closest you have.
You reached your personal limit though. And that's.
I was there and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to click a button and go home. And you're thinking, we're miles and miles from anywhere on the side of a mountain. I have to get down. Like, I have to get back to the tent and get warm.
There is no option. The
thing that upsets me the most, though, is if anybody follows your Instagram, like when gyms are open, you are in the gym. That's all you do is you just go to the gym, JD, and eat vegetables and yogurt. Yeah, so you are a healthy bloke. And you were struggling doing that.
I would never call you fat.
I wouldn't call you a bag of shit on any day of the week. So.
But to tell you the truth, you go with somebody who's a professional special forces soldier, and I would go as far as to say as the professional New Zealand hunting guide was a level up again in mental and physical toughness. I mean, we were crossing rivers, and I'm like being meticulous when you cross the river to get every bit of sand out of your toes and dry your feet properly because you don't want blisters. The New Zealand guy, you look up and he's 500 yards further up the mountain. He just chucked his socks and boots straight back on, twigs and sand, everything, and just the toughness of those people out there. But it was brilliant. I mean, it made me feel so fucking soft when you're moaning about having to climb a mountain in Scotland and stuff like that. It really did teach me a valuable lesson and gave me a serious arse kicking. And like then my buddy Will, who was, we had the camera, and like I'm struggling up this mountain, like huffing and puffing, and he's like, "Oh, I'll just nip up there with the camera and get, that'll be a nice shot." And he just runs off up this
different caliber of human.
Yeah, it's, you're dealing with people who are as fit as professional athletes. Like I'm not sitting behind a desk all day, so there's.
But do you feel that because you were socializing and hanging around with people of that caliber, that brought you up?
Oh, absolutely. Because you, if I'd been there with somebody else like me, we would have talked ourselves into quitting.
Yeah. And you would have had more days off. You wouldn't have done the things you did. Yeah. And it would have been, yeah.
I remember.
I respect that. That's good. Yeah. That's awesome.
Sure.
I remember at one point on that trip, I was freezing cold. We hadn't seen any tar all day, and we were sat like huddled in under a rock on the side of a mountain waiting for the tar to start moving in the evening. And I was just kind of saying, this is probably the last place in the world I want to be. And if Will had a turn to me at that point and said, this hunt is crap, we're not seeing the number of animals, I think we should go and get a hotel for the last couple of days and just go home. And Will turned around to me and he was like, lad, isn't this some crack? I was like looking for reception to ring a chopper to get me out there, and he was having the time of his life, and I'm just looking at him going like, there's something fucking wrong with you. But it made me stay there because I'm like, I can't wimp out here. Like I can't suggest to this man that we like cut this short because we've come for 2 weeks, we have to hunt every minute. Like this was there was nowhere else in the world he'd rather have been. And I was like, I just can't be such a pussy here. And it taught me how much of a pussy I was, really, to be honest.
I'm carrying my pigeon shooting gear 50 yards. I can't drive there. And you've told me these stories and I'm like, okay, I'm a fanny. It's official.
I was the exact same. And like that guy we went with, Ben Tamata, Big Game Hunting New Zealand, you look up his Instagram because like you look at these guys' Instagrams and you see the photos of where they are and what they do, and you think like, oh yeah, they've just walked up to there. But like the scale of the place is fucking insane. Like it's, people die out there. Like, I mean, and I would have died if I'd been there on my own, without a doubt. Like just not knowing how to deal with the mountains, how to walk in the mountains, and like I know people,
how to deal with your own head.
Yeah.
Which was the first thing that'll kill you.
It was a massive eye opener for me. I thought I was this great hardy hunter, professional stalker from Ireland, and it was going to be a walk in the park. It really, really wasn't. It was tough. It was really
wow.
But I loved it. I'm so glad I did it. And I'm so glad I did it properly. Did it on public land. Didn't go private land. And we had everything. Like we had heli hunters going in and shooting tar in a valley that we'd spent a half day walking into, and just fucked the whole valley. And you have to turn around and come out and look at the maps and try and do something else. And at the time, it was so frustrating, and you're going, why didn't we go private land? But as Bruce is like, looking back 5-6 years later, I wouldn't change a thing. And I didn't even get my tar. We shot a tar and it fell down cliffs, and we couldn't find it. We spent 2 days looking for it and couldn't climb to where it was.
See, that's the video you want to watch.
Well, that's the experience
I want to see.
I did a video. Because
how many times have we all been there when you've gone, even whether it be from pest controlling in England to tar shooting, like we've all been there. Every single one of us has been there where you shot your quarry and you tried whipping through that hedge, or you tried going down that mountain edge to go and get your quarry and you can't find it.
Yeah.
So that surely then goes from, because you are held in high regards from the bulk of the hunting population, JD.
Oh, but to see you, until you came on the broken gun.
Yeah, now you're fucked now, mate. Unlucky. No one's going to want to work with you now. But everyone's been in that situation where they have shot their quarry and you're like, wow, that was a great bird, that was a great beast, that was a great whatever. But we can't fucking pick it, we can't find it, we can't get to it. And that kind of, that makes you like the average Joe, which then surely makes you more accessible.
Yeah, I'm like, I've never tried to hide any of that with the stuff we do. And I'm always like really conscious to try and be humble in videos and not like bullshit things and not make it look better than it is. Because like, why do you want to be a dick? Like, why do you want, I don't really get it, like, why people feel that they need to make their life look better than it actually is. Like, because what we do as hunters is pretty fucking cool anyway. So just let's be realistic about it. And I think with making the films, and I think once we start to believe that we're bigger stars than what we're actually filming, you're fucked. Because it doesn't really matter who's going out and doing the shooting. Hunters want to watch the hunting. They want to watch the wildlife. It doesn't really matter who's doing it. Like, so, like,
I agree, but I also disagree. So I totally agree. The location and the beast that you're stalking, you know, that's the star of the video. But you've got to have something about you. Nobody would watch you if you didn't have the personality to carry that show, if you would.
Look at the shooting show.
He doesn't.
For example, case in point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't
sell yourself short, Jason, by saying, oh, anybody could do this. I've heard you say it before, and to a degree, you're right. But to take that extra 10 or 15%, it's the man in front of the camera. And I think you do have a persona, a personality, an ability.
The source.
There's something about you that people actually enjoy or are engaged with. So,
well, I'm not here you go, JD. I'm just saying. Here's an example for you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I'm massively narcissistic and self-perpetuating. But when you messaged me back on Facebook many years ago, I was like, oh my fuck, JD's just messaged me. Oh my God. Oh my God. And I'm proper flat for ages and I realized you're a fucking weirdo. You're just like me. So it's all right. I've deleted.
So Johnny Carter.
This week. It was great.
Family. I've got the family in New Zealand. I have a brother-in-law and a sister-in-law. Are you still keen to come and hunt tar? Or has this put you off?
No, do it. 100% do it. You have to do it.
Johnny will blow out. Johnny will blow out to go and shoot at the tar.
No illusions that it is unbelievably hard. And I've got a few mates who've been out there and spoken to a few people who have even worked out there, and everyone has said it's the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. You won't even get one, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
If I was going to do it again, I would go private land. That's the only thing I'd do differently, because the exact same terrain, like literally some of the valleys we were hunting was public land and the next ridge over is private land. And it just means that our guide sort of said to us, on public land, his hit rate for a mature bull is like every 4 days. On private land, it's sort of every two. So you just
give 50% better chance.
There's more animals on the ground, basically. And you know who's been in there last, and you know it hasn't been culled by Department of Conservation and all that kind of stuff. That's the only thing I'd do different. And then that would free up more time to do some other hunting or fishing or something down there. Because we spent 10 nights on a mountain and had to fly out of the country again. We didn't have any more time.
So while you're in there, were you just eating rations that you'd brought in with you, or were you actually fishing and eating off the land? Or
we were eating freeze-dried sort of mountain house meals. When we choppered in, we'd brought some fresh stuff with us, and our guide was cooking up on and stuff. But most of the time, we were just eating freeze-dried meals. But they're really good, really, really tasty.
I did something similar years ago in Papua New Guinea that was not hunting related, but it was a hiking related thing. And I look back at it now and go, it was amazing that I did it, but it was 10 days in Papua New Guinea walking the Kokoda Trail that at the time was the toughest thing that I'd ever done in my life. It was 10 hours a day for 10 days of walking that was on some of the most extreme stuff that you've ever walked across. And they fought a giant battle through Papua New Guinea, and that's why we walked it, because it was a bit of an Australian. That's where we fought off the Japanese. So from, you know, Port Moresby, out it was. And you can do. I was guided tour, but I was under no illusion that it was going to be easy. And when I got there, it was 10 times harder than what I ever thought it would ever be. But those experiences teach you who you are and what you are capable of, and what you think you're capable of. There's more in the bank, definitely.
Yeah, it teaches you to be humble as well, doesn't it? Because you're never as tough as you think you're going to be, and you're crumbling and weeping and wanting to go home. You kind of think, I need to pull my socks up here and not be such a fanny.
You're here, and you survived it, and you've I'm sure you'd get back and do it again.
Oh, absolutely. And like, we could have had a totally different experience. I mean, I know people that have gone out and shot a belter on the first day. It's just we had bad luck after bad luck after bad luck. But now looking back at the story, and like Will, my buddy, shot his on the very last day. And I was there and saw him shoot it. And it was like, it was quite an emotional experience because we both worked so hard all week. And it was like, dang, fuck, somebody's got one.
Just wanted to pat one of these bastards.
Yeah, and like he's got cruciate issues from when he was in the army. So his knees were pretty fucked by the end of 10 days. And then he was packing this off the hill in the dark and his knees were starting to give him trouble and stuff. And then I'm like, oh shit, now the strongest part of the chain is
now fucked. Yeah. So JD had to step up.
Yeah, because our guide had actually left us. We were only supposed to hunt for 7 days. And because we both hadn't got a tar, he was like, look, it's public land, just fucking go for it. So we stayed out ourselves for another like 3 days, just smashing it, trying to get Will a tar.
How did you psychologically deal with the person that was holding you up? Now you're having to hold the psychologically stronger person up. How did you deal with that?
It was literally only
put money on it. He wasn't whinging.
It was only for a couple of hours, in fairness. But the very last day, we got out of our tent and we had a hell of a climb. And it was the first time Will had ever been behind me. And he was like, my knees are giving me fucking shit. He's got two disconnected cruciates and he's never operated on them. He's like, why would you do that?
He's a fucking Irish lunatic, that's why.
And it was like that first climb when I'm sort of leading the way and I'm kind of going like, shit, I have to sort out how to get up this mountain. 20 minutes in, he was past me and gone, but...
Okay. You sold that to us that you were the saviour of the fucking hunt there, JD.
That night, we had to walk down this ridgeline. It was maybe like 3-4 hours, and he had his pack on with all the meat and the skin. And I had probably like a 20-kilo pack, but I was trying to pick my way down this ridgeline just in torchlight. So I was trying to go as quickly as I could in case I got bluffed out and had to come back. So he wouldn't have to go and take the tricky route.
Yeah, so you were taking a shit, so he didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah, and I felt I was under so much pressure because, like, right now it's on me to find the best way to get us home. And you're going, like, it's not much further, it's not much further. And I remember looking down every gully, shining the torch down, waiting to see the reflection off the reflectors on the tent, on the guy lines. And you're going, like, it can't be much further. And you keep looking at the GPS and it must be this gully, it must be this gully. And the place is just huge. I remember when we eventually saw it, like, and we just got back to the tent and you're cooking up some of the tar meat and all, and like we stank as well, like you hadn't had a shower in 10 days. And then he was worried about, I don't know, like badgers or something eating his tar. So we're in this tiny two-man tent that we'd lived in for 10 days and we had a fucking
dirty great big tar in the middle of it.
Tar head and skin in the tent with it. Incidentally, about 2 years
I
later.
Bet you that was a challenging wank.
I'll tell you what, you're not a man till you've had a man in that situation.
Not a man till you've had a tar.
So 2 years later, myself and Carly were camping in Scotland and I had the same tent and she climbed into it and she was like, what the fuck is the smell of this tent?
Well, it's a mixture of dead tar and dried spunk.
Man love.
Fucking hell, mate! What a hunting trip! What an absolute hunting trip that was.
That's one that I wanted to go back from a 40th. I was trying to start to plan it, but it doesn't look like they're going to have international hunters in for at least 2 years. But yeah, that's definitely something I want to go back.
Hang on, your 40th is in the future.
40th is next year.
Oh, Doyle's the same age as me.
Never.
You want to walk kids off of doing your paper round?
So you're an 82 baby as well, Jason.
Yeah, September 82.
Oh, I'm October 82. There you go.
Look at that. So obviously you told us
get a room.
We're about to open a bubble with New Zealand, so hopefully there's some tar left for me and I can go there for my 40th.
Yeah, do it, Brucey boy. So obviously that was a hunting story about you powering through. Have you ever had a hunting story where you've been, fuck this, I'm done, I'm off?
If it was going to be one, it would be that one, surely.
Well, not necessarily, because apparently Wicklow is fairly tough.
We nearly did it this morning. I went out for a roll book with a mate of mine from just up the road, and it was -2 and snowing and windy, and we were like sitting there like, no, we'll just go for a McDonald's breakfast instead.
Stick it on Instagram and just tell people how you really are.
Didn't even, there was nothing even for Instagram. We walked into Wanwood and it was just so cold. Like, there's going to be no Robux around here. My fingers were starting to tingle with the cold. So we just went and had a Mackie D's breakfast, and yeah, so we gave up.
Everybody, this is the real Jason Doyle.
You see what happens when there's other options, though? If there was no other option, then yeah,
this is it.
In the middle of nowhere, there's no Happy Meal, is there?
Hours to get into the mountains, a bit different to rolling 10 minutes out of bed and going, nah, look, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sausage and egg at muffin.
Yeah. He's not a lunatic.
No, that's it.
There's loads of days when I was guiding in Ireland that you just don't want to go out, but when you have people there paying to be there for 4 or 5 days, you just have to do it. But we just get so much shitty weather and rain and cold and
you just don't want to go.
Right then, guys. Well, that kind of, we're going to start drawing the podcast on end now. So this is the part of the podcast where we like to promote a social media platform, whether it be YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Grindr in Bruce's case, or a business that we would like to promote. So I will start with our guest, Jason of the Doyle.
For me, it's an Instagram page. It's the guy, Will O'Mara, who went to New Zealand with me, who I was just chatting about. His Instagram is excellent. It's sort of a mixture of his hunting life and a little bit of his old military life thrown in there as well. He does some pretty cool stuff with rifles. But yeah, it's Will O'Mara Hunting. And give him a follow.
Can you spell O'Mara? Just...
Yeah, I'm typing it in now.
O'Mara.
Mine's a business this week for the simple fact that I have product tested some stuff that was gifted to me over a year ago. They haven't hassled me, and they were very good with me saying, you know what, it needs to be, I need to believe in this product. And the product that I'm going to promote this week is Vario Hearables. It's a hearing molded hearing protection that is, it's second to none. It really is. They make a hearing protection that's molded to your ears, and it's not based on budget. It's, you can get your molded earplugs with a blank, or you can have them made with the electronic version of it. The customer service is phenomenal. They're great people, made in the UK. So that's what I'm going to go, is Vario Hearables this week.
Alrighty.
Tidy job, mate. Well done. Lloyd?
I'm going completely off the rails. I'm going to recommend a YouTube channel called Fire Department Chronicles. It is a firefighter in the US who does a selection of green-screened piss takes, basically. So there's a couple of shows in the US that feature sort of firefighting. And this guy does like kind of a Mickey take of the scenes, of the techniques they're using, and it's just hilarious. It's Fire Department Chronicles on YouTube. He does pretty regular posts, and it's a right laugh.
Tidy job. Well done, Mr. T. Mr. Carter?
I'm going to take a very small moment of self-promotion and say we launched a new YouTube channel called TGS Air this week.
Oh, you dick. That's what I was going to say.
You can recommend it too, if you like.
Oh, I shan't bother.
We stopped doing air gun stuff on our main channel a little while ago because it just didn't fit. We really sort of kind of decided we were more of a shotgun thing, but we missed doing air gun stuff. So started that. It features the world's biggest pikey, Escape Siberia, and me playing with guns. It's all right. It's going into, as soon as an episode up, there'll be an episode out fortnightly.
I've got to say, the best part about TGS Air is actually that Pikey Murphy. You are boring as shit. Ryan is the only element of comedy in that channel. Yeah, no, TGS Air is good. It's good. Well, thank you, Mr. Carter. For myself, I'm going to go Muddy Gutter Calls. He is the manufacturer of the Goose Call that brings me so much joy that I still can't fucking drive, that stops the clay shooters talking about clay shooting. But yeah, Muddy got a calls. He's a good lad. He's got the strangest accent in the world. He's half Cockney, half fucking Scottish. It's so strange. But go and give him a follow. Make some magical calls.
Especially if you're boring mate, you need to be quiet.
Exactly. So, guys, I think that draws the conclusion our latest podcast. JD, thank you ever so much for coming on. You're welcome back on any time, mate. Welcome back on any time, mate.
So, here, are we famous yet?
Go on, Johnny, say the line.
Go on, Johnny.
Are we fucking famous yet or what?
Yeah, we've got Doyle on. Yeah,
Doyle's
already
has been the one to say it in his dulcet.
Say it, JD. Go on, you know you want to.
What is it?
Are we fucking famous yet or what?
What accent do you want it in?
Somerset. Like yours. My accent.
Are we fucking famous yet or what?
Oh my god, that sounds just like
that's Eddie. Not bad at all.
That's pretty good. JD, thank you very much. Guys, take care. Look after yourselves.
Adios.